are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
We continue with our live coverage of the impeachment hearings, day one. Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman and Jennifer Williams, State Department detailee to Vice President Pence's office. We're going to just let's just play this next questioning from the Republican congressman. Then what we're going to do is we're going to head in is Mike Turner from Ohio. Then I'll start to give a catch up and a debriefing of what we've seen over this morning. And then we'll continue on. So here's Mike Turner with Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman.
Right, Ms. Williams.
And Williams.
I would say that certainly in terms of this specific relationship between NATO and Ukraine, that would fall to Ambassador Hutchison, and between the EU and Ukraine to Ambassador Sondland. But obviously we have an ambassador in Ukraine as well.
Right. Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, you would agree?
I agree with Ms. Williams.
Great. Now, Lieutenant Colonel, you said in your written statement that Mayor Rudolph Giuliani promoted false information that undermined the United States-Ukraine policy. Have you ever met Giuliani?
Just to be, again, accurate, I said false narrative just because that's what I said in the record this morning, but okay. I have not met him.
And so you've never had a conversation with him about Ukraine or been in a meeting with him where he has spoken to others about Ukraine?
No, just what I saw him, his comments on TV.
So news
and
report.
In news, yes.
And similarly, you've never met the President of the United States, right?
That is correct.
So you've never advised the President of the United States on Ukraine?
I advised him indirectly. I made all his preparations for the calls.
But you've never spoken to the President of the United States and told him advice on Ukraine?
That is correct.
So in your written statement, you said, in May, I attended the inauguration of President Zelensky as part of the president delegation led by Secretary Perry. Following the visit, the members of the delegation provided President Trump a debriefing. Well, that's not really accurate, right? Because the members didn't, because you were a member, but you weren't in that meeting, were you?
That is correct.
Okay, so we'll just have a note there that meeting occurred without you. Now, you do know that this impeachment inquiry is about the President of the United States, don't you, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman?
I do, Representative.
Excellent. Now, you've said that you're responsible for coordinating U.S.-Ukrainian policy.
Correct.
Does the Secretary of State, Pompeo, report to you?
He does not.
Ambassador Volker?
He does not. We coordinate.
Ambassador of Ukraine, EU, NATO, Assistant Secretary for Europe, anyone at DOD report to you with respect to your responsibilities of
he just got
coordinating
coffee.
U.S.
It's
policy
it, this
with
guy.
Ukraine?
Congressman, at my level, I convene what's called a sub-policy coordinating committee. That's Deputy Assistant Secretary. I chair those meetings. And
does anybody need your approval and your role on Ukraine policy to formulate Ukraine policy? Do they seek your approval?
According to the NSPM-4, the policy signed by the President,
so he
policy
gets to
should
do
be
it.
Coordinated by the, he by gets the to do NSC, it. Correct. we help
Ms. Williams,
it.
Do you have any information that any person who has testified as part of this impeachment inquiry, either in secret or in public, has either perjured themselves or lied to this committee?
I have not read the other testimonies. And
so you do not. Do you have any evidence, though, that they have perjured themselves or lied?
No, because I have not read them.
Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, do you have any evidence that anyone who has testified before this committee in the impeachment inquiry has perjured themselves or lied to this committee?
Not that I'm aware of.
Thank you. I yield back.
Okay. There was nothing.
Mr. Carson.
All right.
Thank you, Chairman Schiff. I yield.
Let's bring this down. We can have it maybe in the background. Put it down in the switch the boxes. That would be good. Folks, here's what we're doing. If you're just joining us, we have been live covering the impeachment hearing since 9 a.m. this morning. The two people testifying as of this morning, Lieutenant Colonel Alex Vindman, he is, as you, I think, just heard, with the NSC. He is a sub, I guess, cabinet member, a policy position where he coordinates Ukrainian policy. We will hear from what we're going to do is we're going to play basically some snippets. You will get the hearing wrapped up in about 30 minutes, I think it'll take us. And this is and that's what we're going to go through. For those people who have been following, they may want to switch over to a C-SPAN to see the rest of the hearings. But the gist of it, and we've heard from the two lawyers, we've heard from some of the members. Apparently, it looks like the Republicans demoted Stefanik. But maybe we will come back if she gets to speak again. But we'll play you some of the highlights. Basically, what the Republicans were trying to do is say this guy was out of the loop. He was irrelevant. That sort of implying that the president can change policy if he wants to, which, of course, he can. But then the question is, what policy did he change it to? And did he have authority to hold up funding that was already appropriated by Congress? Those are the big questions. And so let's start just with Vindman's opening statement. I got to say, I found this somewhat moving in some respects. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm not typically moved by, you know, these things. Maybe it just I said earlier that I am aware of people who came to this country from the Soviet Union, probably around the time that he did. There was, you know, different waves of when you had people come to this country. And you can see this is a guy who is there. He's been subpoenaed. He doesn't seem to be terribly psyched about it. But he's there and he's giving his testimony. This is Vindman basically speaking directly to his father, who apparently the family has had to sort of go into hiding a little bit because of threats. He has told us at this point, I think, that his two other brothers are also in the U.S. military. One appears to be there today, who is also a member of the NSC. And here is his basically his message to his dad, because his dad's probably watching the hearing, but, you know, again, has had to go underground a little bit.
Dad, I'm sitting here today in the U.S. Capitol talking to our elected professionals. Talking to our elected professionals is proof that you made the right decision 40 years ago to leave the Soviet Union and come here to the United States of America in search of a better life for our family. Do not worry. I will be fine for telling the truth.
There you go. It was a pretty moving open statement. And he clearly was nervous and uncomfortable throughout the whole thing. Here is Jennifer Williams. This is, I think, a part of her opening statement as well, if I'm not mistaken, making clear what her role was. And she doesn't go, her feelings about what happened, they didn't really travel very far. Her direct superior was also on the call. And her direct superior, obviously, I think, works for Pence as well. And she didn't feel it necessary, as far as I know, to report to anyone else that she found it inappropriate. At one point, though, it becomes clear that she did. And here it is.
On a tranche of security assistance designated for Ukraine. According to the information I received, OMB was reviewing whether the funding was aligned with the administration's priorities. I subsequently attended meetings of the Policy Coordination Committee where the hold on Ukrainian security assistance was discussed. During those meetings, representatives of the State and Defense Departments advocated that the hold should be lifted, and OMB representatives reported that the White House Chief of Staff had directed that the hold should remain in place. On September 11th, I learned that the hold on security assistance for Ukraine had been released. I have never learned what prompted that decision. On July 25th, along with several of my colleagues, I listened to a call between President Trump and President Zelensky, the content of which has since been publicly reported. Prior to July 25th, I had participated in roughly a dozen other presidential phone calls. During my closed-door deposition, members of the committee asked about my personal views and whether I had any concerns about the July 25th call. As I testified then, I found the July 25th phone call unusual because, in contrast to other presidential calls I had observed, it involved discussion of what appeared to be a domestic political matter. After the July 25th call, I provided an update in the Vice President's daily briefing book, indicating that President Trump had a call that day with President Zelensky. A hard copy of the memorandum transcribing the call was also included in the book. I do not know whether the Vice President reviewed my update or the transcript. I did not discuss the July 25th call with the Vice President or any of my colleagues in the Office of the Vice President or the NSC. On August 29th, I learned that the Vice President would be traveling to Poland to meet with President Zelensky on September 1st. At the September 1st meeting, which I attended, President Zelensky asked the Vice President about news articles reporting a hold on U.S. security assistance for Ukraine. The Vice President responded that Ukraine had the United States' unwavering support and promised to relay their conversation to President Trump that night. During the September 1st meeting, neither the Vice President nor President Zelensky mentioned the specific investigations discussed during the July 25th phone call. Thank you again for the opportunity to provide this statement.
Okay. We don't need to hear anything past that. Okay, now there's a couple of things that you should know here that becomes relevant. One, she said that the, you know, obviously the funding gets released September 11th. We will go, we will cover in a minute testimony that shows that that was a couple of days after the investigation into why it was being held up was done. But we're going to jump to questioning that Schiff had of Williams. This is clip number 9-2, I guess it is. Or wait, there's three. Okay. All right. Well, one is a question about Giuliani, and then the other. So Schiff then asks Williams about that Pence-Zelensky meeting. Now, one of the things that we find out in the course of this is that Pence's trip to talk to Zelensky was canceled. The inaugural trip was put on hold before they knew when the date of the inauguration is. And the reason why that was important is because for whatever reason, Trump said Pence is not going to the inauguration. And that happens if there's some type of conflict. Both the president and the vice president are not supposed to be out of the country at the same time. The vice president was not made aware, at least Williams was not made aware as to why the trip was canceled before they even knew when the date was, which made it a rather sort of suspicious cancellation. It wasn't being canceled for any scheduling purposes. It was being canceled for some unknown reason, at least at that time. So let's go to that clip number 9 at 11:38. And this is when Schiff is asking Williams about Pence and Zelensky's meeting that she just commented on that she attended on September 1st, where there was no mention whatsoever about a quid pro quo or bribery or extortion, whatever you want to call it. But subsequent to that meeting, moments later, there was another meeting. And this is what is important to know about that meeting. This is 11:38. Go ahead, Blake.
Were they not?
That is correct.
So when people suggest, well, maybe Rudy Giuliani was acting on his own and maybe he was a freelancer or whatever, the president referred to exactly the same two investigations Rudy Giuliani was out pushing on his behalf. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, here it is with Williams.
Now, Ms. Williams, you were asked about the meeting the vice president had with Zelensky in September, in which the Ukrainians brought up their concern about the hold on the security assistance. Is that right?
That's right.
And you were asked about whether in that meeting between the vice president and Zelensky, the Bidens or Burisma came up, and I think you said they did not, correct?
That's correct. They did not come up.
Now, that bilateral meeting was a large meeting that involved two or three dozen people, wasn't it?
It was.
So in the context of this meeting with two or three dozen people, the vice president didn't bring up those investigations, correct?
No, he did not bring up those investigations. He's never brought up those investigations.
But were you aware that immediately, and I mean immediately, after that meeting broke up, Ambassador Sondland has said that he went over to Mr. Yermak, one of the top advisors to Zelensky, and told Yermak that if they wanted the military aid, they were going to have to do these investigations or words to that effect?
I was not aware at the time of any meetings, side meetings that Ambassador Sondland had following the vice president's meeting with President Zelensky. I've only learned that through Ambassador Sondland's testimony.
So at the big public meeting, it didn't come up, and you can't speak to the private meeting that was held immediately thereafter?
Correct. The vice president moved on with his schedule immediately after his meeting with President Zelensky.
Now, Colonel Vindman,
okay,
I want to cut it there for now.
So the bottom line is, Pence goes there, he gives the overarching thing, and then Sondland goes right after the meeting to go, like, let me describe to you what just happened. That was the vice president carrying the word from the president, which I have told you in the past. We need these investigations, or at the very least, we need a public announcement, not from you, Yermak, assistant to the president, not from your foreign, your prime minister. We need it from the president, and he needs to do it on TV, maybe CNN, whatever. But we need the announcement. The president needs the deliverables. And of course, they don't do this in the big public meeting because this is part of the irregular channel. And there was really no pushback on that. Again, we have a situation where the Democrats are telling one story and the Republicans, instead of trying to refute that story, are trying to create a whole nother narrative that somehow Vindman and Williams and the rest of them, they've never said that it was bribery, or they're from the deep state, or they just don't know, or that the whistleblower worked for Democrats, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, that's what they do, and their people are going to believe them.
There's no doubt that their people are going to believe them. Their people are not going to hear anything else, frankly. I mean, I don't know that if we were to take 100% of the Republicans who watch Fox and have them sit down and watch our coverage, that it would dissuade them. But certainly they're not even going to have that type of opportunity.
That's the beauty of telling a story that has no relation to the truth, is people can't accidentally stumble upon it.
It's even better, actually, yes, yeah, than even building on that. All right, so let's get back to the timeline here. Lieutenant Vindman retells the Bolton drug deal story. And then we'll also, going to jump to that third segment that we just ended with Schiff, because this is so during his testimony, Vindman explains why he went to the NSC's inspector general, essentially a lawyer there, after the July call. But you should know that Vindman had actually made a report to this IG before then, and we will get to that. Schiff brings that back up in his first line of questioning after the initial round of questioning. But it's important to note, and this is what makes the case so much stronger for what the Democrats are trying to argue, that there was contemporaneous reports from different places that were all basically raising a red flag as to what was going on. Some of it was a function of the phone call. Some of it preceded the phone call as people started to get wind of what was happening in terms of this sort of irregular team.
And just to be clear, it wasn't a red flag about a perfect call.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
The call was too perfect. Here is Vindman. This starts at 9:52.
But let me turn, if I can, to the hold on security assistance, which I think you both testified you learned about in early July. Am I correct that neither of you were provided with a reason for why the president put a hold on security assistance to Ukraine?
My understanding was that OMB was reviewing the assistance to ensure it was in line with administration priorities, but it was not made more specific than that.
And Colonel Vindman?
That is consistent. The review was to ensure it was remained consistent with administration policies.
And Colonel Vindman, you attended a meeting in John Bolton's office on July 10th where Ambassador Sondland interjected to respond to a question by senior Ukrainian officials about a White House visit. What did he say at that time?
To the best of my recollection, Ambassador Sondland said that in order to get a White House meeting, the Ukrainians would have to provide a deliverable, which is investigations, specific investigations.
And what was Ambassador Bolton's response or reaction to that comment?
We had not completed all of the agenda items, and we still had time for the meeting, and Ambassador Bolton abruptly ended the meeting.
Did you report this incident to the National Security Council lawyers?
Yes, I did.
Based on Ambassador Sondland's remark at the July 10th meeting, was it your clear understanding that the Ukrainians understood they had to commit to investigations President Trump wanted in order to get the White House meeting?
It may have not been entirely clear at that moment. Certainly, Ambassador Sondland was calling for these meetings, and he had stated that this was developed per conversation with the Chief of Staff, Mr. Mick Mulvaney, but the connection to the president wasn't clear at that point.
Pause it for 1 second. Okay, so let me explain to you what he is testifying here. On July 10th, there was a meeting with Bolton, with Fiona Hill, with Rick Perry. He believes, Vindman believes, that Kurt Volker was there for parts of it. Sondland, Bolton, obviously, a guy named Wells Griffith, whose name I hadn't heard prior to this. The Ukrainians there were a guy named Danielik, Yermak, who is Zelensky's assistant, and a third person who was a Danielik advisor. So what Vindman has just testified to is that during the course of the meeting, Sondland brings up in front of everybody, you guys got to get these investigations of Burisma and Biden. You got to announce it or you don't get the money. And then Bolton, in reaction to that, says, meeting over. Everybody leaves. The Americans stay. He asked the Ukrainians to leave. And that moment, that second meeting on July 10th, that is now without the Ukrainians, he says, we're not getting involved in this drug deal. That's where that line came from. And that exchange in that first meeting is the first time that Vindman goes to the IG. The second time is after the July 25th phone call, because the IG had said, like, thank you for letting me know about this. If anything like this comes up again, let me know. 2 weeks later, it more or less does. All right, but continue.
But the import of what Ambassador Sondland said during that meeting was that there was an agreement with Mick Mulvaney that Zelensky would get the meeting if they would undertake these investigations.
That is correct.
About 2 weeks after that July 10th meeting, President Trump and President Zelensky had their second call, the now infamous July 25th call. Colonel Vindman, what was your real-time reaction to hearing that call?
Chairman, without hesitation, I knew that I had to report this to the White House counsel. I had concerns, and it was my duty to report my concerns to the proper people in the chain of command.
And what was your concern?
Well, Chairman, as I said in my statement, it was inappropriate, it was improper for the president to request and to demand an investigation into a political opponent, especially a foreign power where there's at best dubious belief that this would be a completely impartial investigation, and that this would have significant implications if it became public knowledge and it would be perceived as a partisan play. It would undermine our Ukraine policy, and it would undermine our national security.
Now, Colonel, you've described this as a demand, this favor that the president asked. What is it about the relationship between the president of the United States and the president of Ukraine that leads you to conclude that when the president of the United States asks a favor like this, it's really a demand?
Chairman, the culture I come from, the military culture, when a senior asks you to do something, even if it's polite and pleasant, it's not to be taken as a request. It's to be taken as an order. In this case, the power disparity between the two leaders, my impression is that in order to get the White House meeting, President Zelensky would have to deliver these investigations.
All right. And so that is the gist of what Vindman had to say. When we pick up in a second, we will hear from the Democratic Council walking Vindman through Trump's call and its lack of being U.S. official policy. However, let me remind you, hiring can be a slow process. Super slow process. I've told you the story about that Cafe Altura's COO, Dylan Miskowitz, who needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company. He was having trouble finding qualified applicants. He switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience, invites them to apply to your job. It grabs them, not off the street, but off the web. So you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter, said he was impressed by how quickly he got great candidates to apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. That's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. I am one of those 4 employers. It's how we found Brendan. And frankly, with all due respect to Brendan, we found, I'd say maybe a dozen people who were great. This is Brendan was just, well, I guess this is a compliment. Was just a little bit greater. But the way that I kept track of it was, because they have a great system to keep track of this stuff, made it much easier. Every other time I tried to hire someone, it was about anxiety and it was about confusion and disarray. Not when I decided to use ZipRecruiter. One of the better decisions I've made. I have like 5 decisions, I think, in the back of my mind that I've made throughout my life that were smart decisions. Geothermal, ZipRecruiter. Those two, basically. I'm going to come up with 2 of those. But you can see why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. Folks, I cannot tell you how many bad gifts I've gotten throughout my life. It's tough to buy gifts for men. It's without a doubt. The fact of the matter is, and here's a little secret, I want a gift that slightly upgrades something that I need to use, right? Utilitarian gift, but a little bit of an upgrade.
That's always my strategy.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, here's good news. Listeners of this show can get $5 off any Harry's shave set by heading to harrys.com/majority report. Free shipping ends on December 16th. This is a great stocking stuffer, so act now. It's a practical gift he will actually use. It's got German-engineered, award-winning blades that last. They're all backed by a 100% quality guarantee. The holiday set starts at just $20, and that's within Secret Santa limits. That's a good Secret Santa gift.
Or a Yankee Swap gift.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know what that is.
Oh, really?
Is it the white elephant thing?
Yeah, yeah. My friends and I do one every year.
My exes used to do that. And Harry's Blade refills are as low as $2 each, so your guy will save money over time. It's the gift that keeps giving. And as a special offer for fans of the show, we've partnered with Harry's to give you $5 off any shave set, including their limited edition holiday sets, when you go to harrys.com/majority report. Plus, of course, you get the free shipping. Harry's shaving set comes with a weighted handle with the option to engrave. Big upgrade. 5-blade razor cartridges, foaming shave gel for rich lather, travel cover to protect your blades, and is packaged in a handsome holiday gift box. Free shipping ends on December 16th, so act now. Go to harrys.com/majority report. That's harrys.com/majority report. And ladies and gentlemen, if you're like me, there's a lot of stuff you would like to do to improve yourself, but you just don't have the time. Maybe it's also you want to improve like your knowledge of history. Maybe you want to improve like your business acumen, or just like how to make friends. Blinkist is an app that compiles the key takeaways from thousands of nonfiction books. Everything you need to know condensed down to 15 minutes. You can read it, or even better, you can listen to it within the app. Blinkist is really unique. It works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. You find everything from health, self-help titles to history and business books included in Blinkist library. Look, it has been recommended to me, I'm not going to say by whom or in what context, but that I work on my emotional intelligence. Well, Blinkist has an emotional intelligence book. Now, am I going to sit down and I'm going to read an entire book on emotional intelligence? Maybe because of my lack of emotional intelligence, I will not do that. However, will I take, I have a feeling there could be other people in the office who might also want to join in on this. Emotional Intelligence by Daniel Goleman. I don't know. Does this guy know about emotional intelligence? I have no idea. Am I going to invest, I don't know, 4 hours to read his book? With all due respect, Mr. Goleman, I'm not. But 15 minutes as I'm walking to work that I can listen to? Sold. Now, maybe that's immature, and maybe after I read it, I'll be more like emotionally mature and intelligent about these things, but that's what I'm going to do. And so I'm going to have check two boxes. One, I'm going to improve my emotional intelligence. Two, I'm not going to have to spend too much time doing it. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen. I mean, they have a ton of other books too. Like, you know, the business books and marketing books and history books. I mean, some books on politics, nutrition, across the board. Motivation and inspiration, management, leadership, corporate culture, if that's your thing, I don't know. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books. All the books you want for one low price. And now for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer for our listeners. You go to Blinkist.com/majority. You try it for free for 7 days. And then you save 25% off. Blinkist.com/majority. Blinkist.com/majority to start your free 7-day trial and save 25% off. Join me in increasing your emotional intelligence. And then we can all be on the same page and be emotionally mature and intelligent about stuff around here for once. Okay.
Sounds great.
Yep. We'll have arrived. Okay. Getting back to the hearings. We have now established, or the Democrats have over the course of the this morning's hearings with Vindman, and as far as our wrap-up, we've now established that there were multiple occasions in which Vindman was prompted to go to the equivalent of the Inspector General. The first was a July 10th meeting, which was the infamous meeting that preceded by moments the meeting where Bolton says, like, we're not getting involved in this drug deal. So you had this meeting where Bolton, the three amigos are also there, Perry, Volcker, and Sondland. You had Vindman there. And you had Fiona Hill there, Wells Griffith, and then you had three representatives from the Ukrainian government. And Sondland says, we want the investigations for the money, And Bolton, at that point, apparently he was not aware of this. He says, time out. Will you Ukrainians leave, please? We need to have a conversation here. And then he says, we're not getting involved in this Giuliani drug deal. And he doesn't realize, I think, at that time, that the three amigos, they're part of the irregulars. He thinks that they're part of just the regulars. He doesn't realize that they're also on Team Giuliani. And Bolton may, at that point, may not have known that this is what the president wanted. Because the infamous phone call does not come to the 25th, nearly 2 weeks later. Vindman goes to the IG after that meeting. He goes to the IG after the 25th. And here is Democratic counsel Daniel Goldman walking Vindman through that call and its absence of a lack of official U.S. policy. Vindman, I think, at one point even says, like, look, the president can say whatever he wants on the call, but my job is to know what U.S. policy is. And if there is a deviation that appears to be completely unrelated to U.S. national security interests, I got to report it.
In other words, they're based on official U.S. policy?
Correct.
And is there a process to determine official U.S. policy?
Yes, that is my job, is to coordinate U.S. policy. So throughout the preceding year that I've been on staff, I had undertaken an effort to make sure we had a cohesive, coherent U.S. policy.
And as you listened to the call, did you observe whether President Trump was following the talking points based on the official U.S. policy?
Counsel, the president could choose to use the talking points or not. He's the president, but they were not consistent with what I provided, yes.
Let's take a look at a couple of excerpts from this call. And right after President Zelensky thanked President Trump for the United States' support in the area of defense, President Trump asks President Zelensky for a favor and then raises this theory of Ukrainian interference in the 2016 election. He says in the highlighted portion, I would like you to do us a favor, though, because our country has been through a lot and Ukraine knows a lot about it. I would like you to find out what happened with this whole situation with Ukraine. They say CrowdStrike.
CrowdStrike.
I guess you have one of your wealthy people, the server. They say Ukraine has it.
They bitwashed it.
Now, Colonel Vindman, was this Gene statement based on the official talking points that you had prepared?
No.
And was this statement related to the 2016 Ukraine interference in the 2016 election part of the official U.S. policy?
No, it was not.
Now, at the time of this July 25th call, Colonel Vindman, were you aware of a theory that Ukraine had intervened or interfered in the 2016 U.S. election?
I was.
Are you aware of any credible evidence to support this theory?
I am not.
Are you also aware that Vladimir Putin had promoted this theory of Ukrainian interference in the 2016 election?
I am well aware of that fact.
And ultimately, which country did U.S. intelligence services determine to have interfered in the 2016 election?
It is the consensus of the entire intelligence community that the Russians interfered in U.S. elections in 2016.
Let's go to another excerpt from this call where President Trump asked President Zelensky to investigate his political opponent, Vice President Joe Biden. Here, President Trump says, the other thing, there's a lot of talk about Biden's son, that Biden stopped the prosecution, and a lot of people want to find out about that. So whatever you can do with the attorney general would be great. Biden went around bragging that he stopped the prosecution, so if you can look into it.
Sounds
horrible to me, he said. Again, Colonel Vindman, was this included in your talking points?
It was not.
Is such a request to investigate a political opponent consistent with official U.S. policy?
It was not consistent with the policy as I understood it.
Now, are you aware of any credible allegations or evidence to support this notion that Vice President Biden did something wrong or against U.S. policy with regard to Ukraine?
I am not.
There you go. Now, there is, I mean, that's basically the nub of the question of what was Donald Trump doing. Now, the Republicans can come out and say it was U.S. policy that was developed. But the problem is that it also was like it was newly introduced at one point between April and July. And it's also clearly cannot be a legitimate U.S. policy that the U.S. government, via taxpayer dollars, provides assistance or support or anything for that matter, even if it's just a meeting with the president, in return for the president getting stuff that will personally enrich him in some way. And the fact of the matter is that an investigation into Hunter Biden, where there's been no allegations as to, I mean, I've never even heard of the right-wing narrative that Joe Biden did anything. It's just that Hunter Biden was there, that you can surmise that that is anything other than personal enrichment, a thing that Donald Trump wants. You want to call it a quid pro quo? It's, I give you this, you give me that, which is the solicitation of a bribe. Now, in this instance, I happen to think it's extortion because it is like I have basically stolen your money that is due you because it's been appropriated duly by Congress, and I'm not going to give it to you until you give me what I want, which, again, is sort of like a bribe. And the Republicans make a big deal of this during the hearing. You can't say quid pro quo and then explain it as a bribe or explain it as extortion. Because of the, of course, the Constitution, which says that you're not allowed to describe a bribe as quid pro quo or as extortion, which, of course, the Constitution does not say.
It's just a retreat to pedantry.
Exactly. Now, here is a clip. So at one point, like I said earlier, the Goldman establishes that this is not a U.S. policy. And it's also been established that Vindman had two occasions to report the president's behavior to his inspector general. One was the meeting where Bolton basically said, we're not getting involved in that drug deal. The other one was that moment where as soon as the call ended, Vindman very quickly said, I reported it because I knew it was inappropriate immediately. Here is Goldman laying out the April to May timeline. This is early on. And it's interesting because this is also the period of time where Trump goes from, we're going to send Pence to the inauguration to, wait a second, he's not going to go to the inauguration, even though they didn't know when Zelensky's inauguration was. So it wasn't a scheduling problem. It was just a mood thing.
Don't know how I feel.
Yeah, I just changed. I just don't like it.
I want to ask you if you were aware of the following things that happened from April 21st to May 13th. Were you aware that Ambassador Yovanovitch was abruptly recalled from Ukraine in that time?
Yes.
Were you aware that President Trump...
I'm sorry, to correct it. So she was recalled prior... Let me see. So she, the notification occurred towards the end of April, and she was finally recalled in May timeframe, I think May 20th, if I recall correctly.
So she learned about it after April 21st, on April 24th, is that right?
Correct.
And were you aware that President Trump had a telephone call with President Putin during this time period in early May?
I was.
And were you aware that Rudy Giuliani had planned a trip to go to Ukraine to pressure the Ukrainians to initiate the two investigations that President Trump mentioned on the July 25th call in this time period?
I was aware that he was traveling there and that he had been promoting the idea of these investigations.
I mean, so there it is. Something happens between April and May that causes Trump to want to get rid of the ambassador to Ukraine who had just received literally months earlier, and we heard this from her testimony the other day, stellar review by the State Department. He also determines during that time that, wait a second, Pence is not going to go to the inauguration whenever it is. Also during that time, he has a call with Putin. I don't know if that is where he got this idea. And it's also when Giuliani heads there. I think it's just as possible that Rudy Giuliani had some business opportunities with his two clients, Parnas and I can't remember the other guy's name, who are incidentally been indicted and are still in custody because there was a concern they were going to flee the country. Maybe they were just involved in some business there. And Giuliani came up with this idea that, like, you got to get rid of Yovanovitch because she's a roadblock to all the things that I got going on over there. It's unclear, and largely it's irrelevant. I don't care if Donald Trump got the idea because Putin said, like, you should do this. And I don't think it's because Trump is Putin's puppet.
Poodle.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure that he's not his poodle. I think it's just he's strong, he's cool, and he said, and he's on my side, which he is, yeah. Right? Like, I mean,
he's Putin's poodle as much as he's Modi's poodle, or he's poodle.
Yeah. I think there's like some strong guys like Erdogan. He's so strong. Yeah.
Wow. Tom Perez was right.
And I mean, he could be, there's a money deal. I mean, who knows? But, you know, Trump's not going to take Barack Obama's advice. He's going to take other world leaders' advice, maybe. I don't know. But it doesn't matter, really, at the end of the day. It's just clear that something changes. Maybe Donald Trump was, you know, I've been meeting with a bunch of PhDs and some people who are, you know, are writing thesis papers on this, and I got really interested in the whole thing. But something changes during that time period, and his own personal policy shifts. And that's when the irregulars really starts. And you just had Goldman basically lay out that timeline there. And do we have that clip of...
I'm going to follow up on that shift part.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. So this is the shift part is... Right. Again, yeah, like this is number 9. Okay, so let's go to this now. This is Schiff in the second round of questioning, basically reiterating when people started to realize when the irregular channel crosses the regular stream, and that's when people start to make reports to the IG and this and that. That's when it becomes clear what's going on.
Now, Colonel Vindman, I want to go back to that July 10th meeting or meetings, the one with Ambassador Bolton and then the one in the wardroom that followed quickly on its heels. Were you aware that Ambassador Bolton instructed your superior, Dr. Hill, to go talk to the lawyers after that meeting?
I learned shortly after she was finished talking to Ambassador Bolton and after we wrapped up with the wardroom that she did have a meeting with him, and that's what was expressed.
Now, you thought you should go talk to the lawyers on your own, correct?
That is my recollection, yes.
But Bolton also thought that Dr. Hill should go talk to the lawyers because of his concern over this drug deal that Sondland and Mulvaney were cooking up. Is that right?
That is my understanding.
And in fact, this drug deal, as Bolton called it, involved this conditioning of the White House meeting on these investigations that Sondland brought up. Is that right?
That is my understanding.
And in fact, this same
conditioning or the same issue of wanting these political investigations and tying it to the White House meeting. This came up in the July 25th call, did it not, when the president asked for these investigations?
That is correct.
So the very same issue that Bolton said to Hill, go talk to the lawyers, the very same issue that prompted you to go talk to the lawyers, ends up coming up in that call with the president. Is that right?
That is correct.
And it was that conversation that once again led you back to the lawyer's office.
That is correct.
Now I yield to the ranking member.
All right. So there, I mean, again, it's a reiteration of what we've been saying, but this is the thing that's really coming out of this testimony on this day. And that is that this was not a one-off in terms of there is a period of time over the course of the month of July where at least two or three people, our hair is on fire because the streams have crossed. The irregulars have exposed themselves to the regulars. The secret policy agenda is now exposed to the legit policy agenda personnel, and they're sending multiple flares up the chain of command like something weird is going on. Now I want to go back to Goldman, his questioning of, I think this is Vindland, because tomorrow Gordon Sondland is going to speak, and tomorrow is going to be is really the fulcrum, I think. They have got Sondland boxed in on two sides. He has said things that he's already had to more or less retract because his recollection was refreshed by other people's testimony. At the time that he testified the first time, he was also not aware that there were other people or didn't think that they were going to testify who overheard, or not really overheard, but sounds like they were participants almost in his conversation with the president, where the president said, like, you know, what's going on with the investigations? And Sondland gets off the phone and turns to the guys around him because he sounds like a real jackass and is trying to impress everybody. President doesn't give a shit about Ukraine. All he cares about is the Bidens. Well, the guy who overheard that conversation, who basically went to Bill Taylor after Bill Taylor's testimony and said, I overheard it. And Bill Taylor said, you should tell the committee. The committee deposes him. He's testifying on Thursday. And tomorrow is when Sondland's testifying. Here is Goldman asking about what Sondland said to the Ukrainians, again, boxing in Sondland. Sondland has a big choice to make tonight. He's sitting down with his family and he's saying, how much do you want daddy to be around and not in jail for lying to Congress?
I want to move now to that July 10th meeting that you referenced, Colonel Vindman. What exactly did Ambassador Sondland say when the Ukrainian officials raised the idea of a White House meeting?
As I recall, he referred to specific investigations that Ukrainians would have to deliver in order to get these meetings.
And what happened to
the White House meeting?
What happened to the broader meeting after he made that reference?
Ambassador Bolton very abruptly ended the meeting.
And did you have any conversations with Ambassador Bolton about this meeting?
No, I did not.
Did you follow Ambassador Sondland and the others to the wardroom for a meeting follow-up?
There was a photo opportunity that we leveraged in order to demonstrate U.S. support. So the White House visit, demonstrating U.S. support for Ukraine and the new national security advisor, who's a technocrat. And then after that, we went down to a short post-meeting huddle or debrief.
were the investigations, the specific investigations that Ambassador Sondland referenced in the larger meeting, also discussed in the wardroom meeting?
They were.
And what did Ambassador Sondland say?
Ambassador Sondland referred to investigations into the Biden's Burisma in 2016.
How did you respond, if at all?
I said that this request to conduct these meetings was inappropriate. These investigations was inappropriate and had nothing to do with national security policy.
Was Ambassador Volker in this meeting as well?
I don't recall specifically. I believe he was there for at least a portion of the time. I don't recall if he was there for that.
Pause it for 1 second. Now, that's really important because Volker's going to testify this afternoon that he didn't know there was any linkage. And because Vindman cannot definitively place him there, it's quite possible that he'll get away with saying he didn't know. Maybe he didn't know. It seems unlikely to me, but maybe he didn't know. Continue.
Specifically, I believe he was there for at least a portion of the time. I don't recall if he was there for that the whole meeting.
Was this statement made in front of the Ukrainian officials?
I believe there was some discussion prior to the Ukrainians leaving, when it was apparent there was some discord between the senior folks, Ambassador Sondland, and other White House staff, myself. They were asked to step out. So I don't recall if they were there for the entire discussion.
The senior White House staff you're referring to, does that include Fiona Hill, your immediate supervisor at the time?
Correct.
Now, you said you also reported this incident to the NSC lawyers, is that right?
Correct.
And what was their response?
John Eisenberg said that he took notes while I was talking, and he said he would look into it.
Why did you report this meeting and this conversation to the NSC lawyers?
Because it was inappropriate, and following the meeting, I had a short conversation following the post-meeting meeting in the wardroom. I had a short conversation with Dr. Hill, and we discussed the idea of needing to report this.
So am I correct, Colonel Vindman, that at least no later than that July 10th meeting, the Ukrainians had understood or at least heard that the Oval Office meeting that they so desperately wanted was conditioned on these specific investigations into Burisma and the 2016 election?
That was the first time I was aware of the Ukrainians being approached directly by a government official.
And directly linking the White House meeting to the investigations?
Correct.
Okay. There you go. And so that's basically when the two streams cross, where the regulars and the irregulars become, or the irregulars' agenda is exposed to the regulars. And whether Volker was there is relevant. He is expected to testify this afternoon that he didn't know. Basically, he didn't know that the aide was testified was connected. It's unclear whether he's going to testify that he knew that it was tied to the meeting, but he is going to, and apparently this is a modification of his testimony. So we'll see. We shall see what happens with Volker. And look, because we want to be fair, here is Devin Nunes. Basically, it's an interesting technique. I mean, and this is the clip that they're going to play on Fox News. We might as well preview it for you here. I could have been the witness that he asked his questions of. Anybody in this room, anybody listening to this? Because the agenda that he had here was not in any way to get to the bottom of any of the accusations he wanted. He wants to put the accusations out there. And of course, he's asking someone who doesn't know anything about them so that they can't be refuted in any way. Here is Devin Nunes I'm trying to work in the cow reference. But here's Devin Nunes asking Jennifer Williams, and I think he turns to Vindman at one point. Do you know anything about blank? And blank is a conspiracy theory that we're going to use on Fox to divert attention from what's going on.
Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, I'm going to ask you same questions.
Oh, wait.
Just to establish some basic.
Oh, we missed the first part of that. No, well, it should be at, let's see here, sorry. Give us a second.
For your service, sir.
Is there a time code on that? All right, well, he asked both of them. We'll do it here with Vindman.
Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, I'm going to ask you same questions, just to establish some basic facts about your knowledge about Ukraine, Burisma, and the role of the Bidens. In September 2015, U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine Jeffrey Pyatt publicly called for an investigation into Sleshevsky, the president of Burisma. Were you aware of these public statements?
I wasn't aware of them at the time.
When did you become aware of them?
During the course of the testimony and the depositions after this impeachment inquiry began.
Did you know of anti-Trump efforts by various Ukrainian government officials as well as Alexander Chalupa, a DNC consultant?
I'm not aware of any of these interference efforts.
Did you know about Deputy Assistant Secretary of State Kent's concerns about potential conflict of interest with Hunter Biden sitting on the board of Burisma?
The only thing I'm aware of is pertains to his deposition.
Did you know that financial records show a Ukrainian natural gas company, Burisma, routed more than $3 million to the American accounts tied to Hunter Biden?
I'm not aware of this fact.
Until recently.
I guess I didn't independently look into it. I'm just not aware of what kind of payments Mr. Biden may have received. This is not something I'm aware of.
Did you know that Burisma's American legal representatives met with Ukrainian officials just days after Vice President Biden forced the firing of the country's chief prosecutor?
I'm not aware of these meetings.
Did you know that Burisma lawyers pressured the State Department in February 2016 after the raid and a month before the firing of Shokin, and that they invoked Hunter Biden's name as a reason to intervene?
I'm not aware of any of these facts.
Did you know that Joe Biden called Ukrainian President Poroshenko at least three times in February 2016 after the president and owner of Burisma's home was raided on February 2nd by the state prosecutor's office?
I'm aware of the fact that President Biden or Vice President Biden was very engaged on Ukraine and had numerous engagements.
There you go. So that was basically Nunes's job.
More like Moonez, am I right?
Yeah, there you go. I couldn't figure that out. I wanted to try and make it a verb, but in some way. But there it is. Nunes does his job. He gets into the record, the sort of the Fox narrative. That will be the clip that they play for the most part. The idea being that there's this whole other, I guess, corruption thing that it's all about Biden and Hunter Biden.
It's kind of like the old, have you heard of Cloward Piven? And the person says, no. It's like, well, you're not a journalist.
There's a little bit of this. Like, how could you call yourself a Ukrainian expert when you're not aware how much money Hunter Biden made as a board of director of this company? How could you say that you're involved in Ukrainian policy, foreign policy, when you're not aware of this? So that is basically what we're looking at. As far as the today's podcast, that'll be that. And this is what we'll do. We're going to make a transition into the fun half. But the fun half, we're going to pick up a little bit more of what's going on the hearings. And then we'll do a couple other stories. And we will probably start back up for some of the Volcker testimony. We will go through, just to give you a sense of what's going to happen today, we're going to go through the Volcker testimony. And who else is coming up today? I've forgotten again. It's Volcker and Morrison. We'll go through the first two counsels questioning. So it'll be about another hour and a half later this afternoon, starting about 2:30. For now, this will be our free podcast for the day. And it gives me an opportunity to remind you, you can support this show by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Become a member. You get the free show. You get it without commercials. And then you also get the extra content that we put out every day. Obviously, stuff like this coverage, we're going to probably put out as well. I think this is important time in the country, fourth time that in our history that we've had impeachment hearings. I think, obviously, from a civics standpoint, it's very important. It's important to hold these people accountable. I would prefer the Democrats do it in a much broader array of things, though I do understand the idea of, like, you get Al Capone on the tax cheating because that's what you can get him on. Donald Trump is unlikely to be removed from office, but this has definitive impact, in my estimation, on potential material benefits for the citizens of the United States. If we elect a Democratic president, it would be my hope that that president would be Bernie Sanders. The chances of Bernie Sanders being able to push his agenda through are, if not directly, certainly indirectly, implicated by these hearings. The difference between having a Democratic Senate, even with three or four senators who are, you know, start off by, you know, not wanting to pursue, even five or six Democratic senators don't want to pursue a Bernie Sanders policy, is vastly different than one that is dominated by Republicans. These hearings are going to make it very difficult for a half a dozen senators. I keep saying this over and over again, but it's really important, I think, for people to internalize this. Because, you know, there are a lot of people who sort of poo-poo this. Some, like I saw a clip from Jimmy Dore the other day, who says there was no quid pro quo, and how could there be anything if they released the... I mean, basically everything that Sean Hannity says. And then there's other people who just don't think it's interesting because it's process-oriented in some way.
Yeah, it's a legalistic process with no real, like, obvious grassroots connection, you know?
It's a legalistic process, but I'm making it clear, in my estimation, what I think the grassroots connection is. And that is that it's going to change the ability of any president who is a Democrat who wants to try and do something that is somewhat progressive. It's going to change directly their ability to do so. That's just simply a fact. Presuming the revolution does not happen between now and a year from now, and we still have the same system of government, any person who is the president of the United States who wants to get any type of policy through that is even remotely close to what we would all want in this office is going to need a democratically controlled Senate. That's not a guarantee. It's not necessarily sufficient, but it's necessary.
I mean, it just obviously Manchin is a much more desirable obstacle than McConnell is.
Of course. Well, McConnell is an insurmountable.
In some scenarios, yes. In some scenarios, I don't think there's going to be a huge difference. But I guess then the benefit would then become Bernie can point at these Democrats and the left can point at these Democrats and say Democrats are trash too, and they won't have the Republicans to hide behind anymore.
That's one benefit. The other benefit is you just stated it when you said in some instances it's true, in some instances it's not. The net is it is the case that it's going to be much better. There's just like no scenario where it's better to have Mitch McConnell being the Senate majority leader than, even as much as I dislike Chuck Schumer, than Chuck Schumer. There's no scenario where it's better. And if you have Bernie Sanders as the president. And so you know, I think like I keep hammering it over and over again. In some ways, I think because of like the response that you had in the cynicism and the idea that this is completely unrelated to actually getting material benefits for the United States for citizens. It's not. It is, in fact, a hugely important part of this. From a political standpoint, I think, you know, if you want to argue like I don't care about civics or holding them to account or the process involved in here or that, you know, it's legalistic, fine. But if your thing is getting material benefits for the people of the United States, the fact of the matter is this has huge implications for it.
Oh, yeah, I definitely care about the outcome. I'm not totally convinced that it's going to have the outcome that you say, but I'm kind of optimistic.
Again, it may not be sufficient, but it certainly is necessary. And so that's the best that we can hope for in these instances. So again, if you want to support the program, join the majorityreport.com. Sign up for the AM Quickie. And listen, a good way to watch this, because we're going to do this again tomorrow. Get the app, majorityapp.com. You can watch live because you can click on watch live when we're live and it will take you to our YouTube and you can watch it on your phone. You can listen on our phone if you can't get the reception you need. You can obviously download the podcast. You can listen to the AM Quickie. Subscribe to the AM Quickie. Helps the show. And a reminder, this episode is brought to you by Blinkist. The Blinkist app takes the key takeaways from thousands of best-selling nonfiction books and condenses them down into just 15 minutes for you to read or listen to. 10 million people are using Blinkist right now. It has a massive and growing library from self-help and business to health and history books. Right now, you can get 25% off your first year at Blinkist.com/majority. That's Blinkist.com/majority. Join me in trying to learn, improve my emotional intelligence. Among other books. Jamie, what's happening on the Antifada?
Oh, this week on the Antifada, I had on Tom, Tanya, and Terrence from the Trillbilly Workers Party, a really good podcast out of Kentucky. We talked about Kentucky's recent election, why they don't think impeachment played a major role, how they became radicals and electoral skeptics, mostly from working in the nonprofit biz and also the public sector, and the pitfalls of a just transition program, and much, much more. Also, on Friday, I released a new episode of Vampire Castle, which is a side project I do with Leslie Lee from Struggle Session, where we talk about actual vampires, folks, not social justice warriors. In this one, we talk about Tony Scott's The Hunger and Joel Schumacher's The Lost Boys, two very different, very 80s vampire movies. The Hunger is kind of famous for two things, actually. Bauhaus sort of invented goth rock with the song Bela Lugosi's Dead, which features prominently on the soundtrack. There's also a lesbian sex scene between Catherine Deneuve and Susan Sarandon. So check it out, folks.
Literary hangover, we've got episode 29, Orinoco or the Royal Slave by Aphra Behn, a 1688 work of prose fiction. People don't want to call it the first novel, but I don't know. She's the first woman in England to make her living by the pen. She was also a spy for the monarchy. So interesting sort of, it's sort of the Jack Ryan of the 1680s, her work. So check that out.
Was she going down to Venezuela? And
not quite, but there's like some Suriname stuff and it's all very geopolitically oriented. So
today is Tuesday. Tonight, TMBS. Find it at youtube.com/TMBS.
Check out Michael's Twitter feed for the rundown there.
All right. Quick break. Head into the fun half. We'll take some phone calls. We'll do a couple of clips and we'll play a little bit more of these impeachment hearings. And then we will be back live at about 2:30 for the next round. And we'll do that for about an hour and a half. And then tomorrow we start at 9 a.m. Tomorrow is going to be a long mofo day because we also have the debate tomorrow night.
We're doing a double.
It's sort of like a triple. All right, we'll be right back after this fun half. Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2. 5/8. 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh.
Rand Paul. I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agreed.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me.
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.